I'm listening to the show every morning, and you can say it's grand. It's not grand if you're not on it, though.
OTB's Mount Rushmore.
Some talent in Cork, isn't there? Wow. A few of the GAA boys weren't happy, but it was my sporting hero. I was contesting, I think, against Jimmy Barry Murphy. So once you're in that company, everything is good.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
It's very, very special. Believe me, I think it becomes more special when you're on the coach, because it's something, unfortunately, inside me that's ultra competitive, and I need to be there.
Catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM on the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Podcast Network.
Well, you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through till 5 o'clock. We're streaming live as well now. You can watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope, at Off the Ball on Twitter, on YouTube, and on Facebook as well. So over the next hour on the Saturday panel, we're talking to football's teachers, those coaches that help make the stars of tomorrow in men's and women's football, but also who mentor and develop players in a really positive way. So with the FAI running webinars on coaching education during the coronavirus pandemic, we're joined by Niall Regan, who's the FAI Head of Coach Education, Jason Donoghue, who's the Republic of Ireland under-15s head coach, and Pearl Slattery, who's an FAI Women's Development Officer and the captain of Shelburne. Niall, Pearl, and Jason, how are you all today?
Very good.
Yeah, great.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, delighted to be joined, and I really like the tactics board already behind you there, Jason. Nice good start. Niall, to start with you, just to tell me about your beginnings in coaching and how you've managed to get to the place where you are today, the head of FAI coach education.
Yeah, well, obviously I started, it seems like a lifetime ago now, but it was all about a mentor, really. Mick Coy, someone who played for Celtic, who's been involved in the development of Cork football. Mick was sort of a close friend of mine, and still is a close friend, and he sort of got me into coaching from a very young age, 16, 17, sort of doing the camps, played locally here in Cork, never had the talent or the ability to fulfill the dream of playing at the highest levels, but I always sort of knew I had a good understanding and reading of the game, and I always liked working with people, and education has been something close to my heart, so coaching seemed like a natural fit, and I started doing it really from a relative young age. Very lucky then to sort of have somebody like Mick that could guide you and help you through the process. Over the 15 years following that, sort of, I did the B license 5 years later. I did the A license 6 years later. I went on and did the pro license. And I think that was really important to have that mentorship with Mick, because he sort of guided me where sometimes young coaches really want to rush through that educational and get the badges done. But he always taught me that it was about get the qualification, put it into practice, learn what you've developed, make mistakes, and then be ready for the next step.
Jason, your journey, you were a Pats at one stage, and now you're the under-15s coach, the youth of today, and hopefully the future stars of tomorrow. How has your journey developed and evolved as a coach?
I'm a fingerless boy, and I was sort of not a very good player. I played at top amateur level, really. I started coaching at 16, 17. I got a bug for it. I was lucky enough to go into the FAI in 2006 as a community development officer working in the Ringsend area. So it worked my way up through the ranks in terms of emerging talent, player development. Done me pathway, very similar to Niall. I would have took a lot of time in between each course. Got time to go out and practice it. I've worked in grassroots. I've worked in St. Pat's system manager. I've worked in during the 1970s international. So basically my route would have been through grassroots coming up rather than doing a professional career and coming back down. So a lot of years, about 29 years coaching now, started at 16 and still going strong.
And Pearl, for you, you've been the captain of Shelburne Ladies. You won the double a few years ago. Why coaching for you? How have you made the transition from a player to a coach?
Yeah, well, I suppose I got the knack for it a few years ago, working on summer camps. That really started me off. And then Sean Bourne was great to me, got me involved in an emerging talent program, and I've been on that the last 6-7 years. Then obviously when Niall came into the association, he was one who I suppose encouraged me now to start getting my badges while I was still playing, so the transition wouldn't be too difficult when I started to finish my career. And I worked with Shell 16 and stuff, doing my UEFA B license again while still playing. And now I've done my UEFA A, but I think the most important thing is I'm still transitioning, but I suppose 4 or 5 years ago, I really started to get the, I don't know, the coaching bug, if you like. And even in sessions with managers who was taking over, you know, after sessions and taking down stuff I liked and remembering things that I didn't really like. And yeah, that's how it started, really.
Is it a career option, folks, or is it a vocation?
I would say both. I mean, the industry is getting bigger. The National League is a huge improvement for football in Ireland. The 13s, 15s, 17s, 19s, possibly 14s and 16s going forward. There's going to be loads of opportunities for coaches to develop, especially working with our best players, I suppose. So it could be both.
I think as well, it depends where you want to go. Like, there's opportunities everywhere, really, isn't there? So again, it's up to the individual.
I think on the majority, though, we're blessed in this country, because I think statistically they say around 95 to 97% of coaches in all sports are volunteers. But I do believe now more than ever, when I started back 20 years ago, it certainly was, it wouldn't have been something you could have seen a career in. While now you see so many young coaches coming through and they're moving abroad, they're taking the qualifications and working in the US, or they're working throughout Europe. So there's so many opportunities now that it just gives you a platform. The qualification is globally recognised. And I think that they're, if somebody now was leaving school at 18, they could certainly say, yeah, I want to become a professional football coach. And there is a very clear mapped out plan for them of how they would need to achieve that.
We've seen with Bohemians, Dundalk, Derry and Rovers going back to training on Monday, folks, that the pandemic has had a massive impact on sport in every genre, in games and soccer and rugby. How has the pandemic affected you guys? And obviously, it is separate from coaching, but it does impact on young players, and even on the fact that people might be making choices now about what sport they want to play. They might not be playing everything during the pandemic. How has COVID impacted you? And how has it, like, fast-tracked the webinars you're doing at the moment?
I think I'll jump in on that one. So we had always looked at e-learning and online learning as being an objective within our strategy. In 2015, the player development plan came in, and that was all about being player-centred in terms of the player development, and then in coach development about being coach-centred. So we had a very clear strategy of what we wanted to do, aligning the two of those up. So in 2020-21, we always had envisaged ending 2020 and launching an e-learning platform. Obviously, the pandemic speeded up that process, and we've been delivering a number of webinars and online interactions. And for the month of May, the phenomenal stats in terms of analytics, we had over 700,000 reaches across all different platforms. So it really does show you the mass of the medium of e-learning in terms of Facebook, Twitter, social media, radio, interviews, all of those things. Moving forward, we're certainly going to continue it. I think the pandemic has given us the opportunity to really develop it and test it and see how it works, which we mightn't have had if it didn't have happened. So that's a positive in itself. And it definitely will be part of our future. I don't think it's going to take over. I think we will slowly but surely return to a new norm. We will be out on the pitch delivering coaching practices in coaching groups, in courses. But I do believe that there is now a place for e-learning to allow people to learn from home.
I also think it's given us time to get in touch with all the participants of our courses over the last couple of years as well. And just to sort of have a dialogue with them, see how they're doing. Is there anything we can assist on? In our courses, we do a lot of micro groups. So we sort of pool all our experiences together. So we would have Zoom chat to all our micro groups, just about assignments, about how they're getting on in their jobs and all. So it gave us good time to sort of open communication lines with participants that we would have had over the last couple of years as well, John. It's very good for that.
And I think even just us working with the 17s even, it's gave us a new way to, I suppose, interact with the girls and I suppose keep them ticking by while we're all waiting to go back to something that we love doing. So we've come up with different ways that we could still touch base with the team, whether I was giving them SWOTs or match analysis, or even personally, you know, as a Women's National League player, we were a day away from kicking off the season when this happened. So at the start, it was very, very tough. But like, I think this time makes you appreciate the sport. I think we can all take it for granted at times. And when it's only when something's taken away from you that you really, really appreciate it. And then again, on the flip side, I suppose it makes you realise that, you know, there is more to football and to enjoy the simple things as well.
Absolutely. I know you had on your Twitter page a lot, Pearl, the skills in the back garden, young kids. That's great to see that kind of stuff. And guys, do we have a philosophy about how football should be played in Ireland? Is there a common thread from the under-13s to the national team in men's to the women's team? Is there a style of play we should be espousing and playing and linked to what Stephen Kenny is doing? Is there a certain way that we should be playing the game?
Well, in the international setup where I'm involved in, all the international managers from Stephen and Mick before that, and even Martin before that, we would have meet, or once a month, we would have had a meeting and discussed all our games and our syllabus and what we're trying to do and what we're trying to achieve. Since now, obviously the lockdown, we've been on Zoom calls and Microsoft Team calls once a week from Stephen all the way down, doing analysis, having a look at different styles of play, and what we're trying to achieve at each level. So the answer would be yes, there is a common pattern there. It wouldn't be a defined syllabus. Like, we would work off, obviously, certain principles that we must follow, especially from the 13s, 15s, 17s and 19s. But we would all agree in terms of getting a better style of play where we're trying to keep possession, dominate possession more, trying to be on the front foot more, rather than going out not to lose games, or going out now trying to win games.
Yeah, it'd be similar on the girls' side, same principles and styles, and as Jay said, they're now changing the mentality of going out to win games and fancying ourselves in groups and making the kids and the players believe that, you know, we can win groups now and qualify for tournaments.
Rude takes full responsibility of getting us all in a room together and making
Rude
sure
Doctor this is, yeah.
Rude Doctor, sorry, yeah, Rude Doctor gets us in a room together. It gets us all going through each other's match reports from Mick, from Stephen, right down to the 15s. We dissecting tactics across the world, latest trends in UEFA and so forth. It should take great credit, to be perfectly honest, on what we're achieving so far from the international setup, in my opinion anyway.
And I think what's really important, and how that ethos or that philosophy literally filters down into the grassroots game, it's that environment Rude has created, where it's not just unified meetings for the international managers. You now have that scenario where our international managers, like Jason, are practitioners, but they're coming in then into coaching courses, and they're literally bringing in modern trends from recent tournaments. I'll never forget the time Colin O'Brien's team had to deal with that penalty decision where the player was sent off. And literally the following week, Colin was in on a UEFA license, and he was able to present on dealing with a conflict and dealing with that situation. So it was phenomenal for the coaches to be able to literally see that on TV, and then the following week be dealing with it with the manager, asking him how he dealt with the situation, how he handled it. Very similar to Jason would come in and present, and even Jason has held CPD events where he's had 40 or 50 coaches attending a training camp, literally shadowing the international manager. And that again is down to one of the key principles within high performance that Rude is very adamant on, is that we all need to evolve together, we need to excel, and we need to inspire the next generation. And that's really key, and it's a credit to the department and for everyone within it. And that's why I believe now we're currently in a very positive place. And it's exciting for me with Stephen Kenny. He spent every one of the contact blocks of the pro license in the group. Again, I remember a scenario where there was a presentation on leadership, and Jason, I think, do you remember, Stephen got everybody up into a circle, and it was like Jason tapped me on the shoulder and he went, "Niall, throw the timetable out the window, let's just go with this." And 2.5 hours later, we were still standing in that circle, and it was a give and take. It was like a boxing match. And I just think that's phenomenal to have such practitioners available for our coaches when they come into formal coaching courses.
Yeah, we've seen obviously the issues that the FAI have had from a governance point of view. But I'm getting a lot of excitement here about Stephen Kenny, Vera Powell as well, Pearl, the fact that we could qualify for the first ever major tournament, the Euros, for the women's team in England. And Stephen Kenny, to me, is a breath of fresh air. He plays the game the right way. He's all about progressive possession football. Is that filtering through the association from under-13s to the senior teams? And folks, is it about not just winning, but also being able to play the game in a technically sound way that you're comfortable on the ball? And are you getting influences from the Dutch, the Belgians? Are you following models from other countries? Because I think ultimately, the more you have the ball, the better you're going to do. And that's a very simple thing to say, but sometimes over the last couple of decades, we haven't had enough of the ball.
I think it might. I have a dual role in the FEI where I'm an educator and we do the pro license, elite UA license, A license down, and also the international job where we're lucky enough that we travel to UEFA study visits. I've been in Germany, Belgium, Holland, Czech Republic, Portugal, just to name a few, where you're going over in study visits, you're having a look what they do, how it's done, the contact time with our players, the professionalism, what is high performance. And we take all nuggets there, bring it back here, and then we're lucky enough that we can instill it in our courses, but also in our international teams as well. So we're learning from everybody. As they say, the best coaches in the world are thieves. They rob from everybody, come back, and then they go and implement it themselves. And that's what we're doing. I think people are too hard on what we achieve. We recently just played games against England, Spain, Holland, and we were as good as them. There was nothing in between it. And if we really get ourselves sort of working in cohesion together to achieve what should be most important, and that is the player's performance, maximizing performance, I think we can achieve a hell of a lot more than what we've done so far in terms of qualifying for tournaments.
And I think fairness has brought our own stamp in and our own philosophy, but in fairness to our players, like, they can do it, they can play that way, and I think the group doesn't lie, we're doing so, so well, and if we were to qualify for a major tournament, you know, it'd be so, so big for this country, so we're in a good position, but hopefully it keeps going.
And I think, again, going back to what Rude does, one of the biggest barriers in Irish football is that it's so fragmented, and what Rude has done over the last number of years is he's tried to break those barriers down, and he's really tried to create a connection, a unified approach. And I remember when Vera came in, immediately we had a meeting and she sat down and talked about what she wanted to try and achieve and how she wanted to get that filtered out immediately to the coaches. And within 2 weeks, she had done a workshop with every one of the women's national league coaches, 17s and the senior women's. And then she did a second workshop for anyone that wanted to attend. So within a month of her being in the country, she'd nearly worked with 200 coaches explaining exactly what her ethos on the game was, how she was going to approach the championship. I think that's really key, is that Rude has really created this environment from top down that everyone is joined up thinking, everyone is going in the one direction, and that's so important for the development of Irish football.
We're talking about development of players. Jason, you've had Troy Parrott and Jason Malumbi pass through your hands in recent years.
Yeah, we would have Troy, the 2002 group, my first year as head coach. Troy would have been our centre forward, our midfielder, our right winger, wherever he could get him in the team. He was that good. Great kid on and off the pitch. Loves the game. He plays the game with such freedom. I hope he gets to play a little bit now. You know, I'm not sure Spurs, he might have to go on loan just to get himself some minutes on the pitch just to help him come along. But he's got a great future if he keeps going, stays injury free.
You think he's special?
I do think he's special. On off the pitch, he's a great leader as well, especially around players. Behaves impeccably, and on the pitch, he's got a skill set that not all players have. Jason Malumbi's attitude was probably the best we've ever had.
Why is that?
He loves to win, and he'll do whatever it takes to win within the rules, obviously. But he's very professional. So, for example, we're in a four-team tournament in Turkey and we just finished a game one of the evenings. So we brought the lads down for a nice bath then. It was in the hotel. And he got in. It was his first time in a nice bath. He's 15 years of age and they're freezing and they're jumping out and so forth. But once he understood how it was going to help his body, I went up for breakfast at 7:30 the next morning. There was Jason, 8:00 in the morning, in the ice bath himself again. Because he understood now that it's going to help his body recover to be ready for the next game. That was him at 14, 15 years of age. And he's just excelled since.
Yeah, we need these midfield players. Stephanie Roach's goal, I know it was a bit of a freak occurrence of brilliance, Pearl, but it got the Puskás Award nomination. Did that really change Irish women's football? Did it really put it on the map and actually give you an identity, a profile that you didn't have? And I think we've seen that now with the games on TV, with your friend Katie McCabe at Arsenal, with the chance to qualify. We're talking about Jason there, we're talking about Troy Parrott, we'll talk to Niall in a moment about the players that have come through from Cork. But what Stephanie did, actually, you think, okay, it's just an incident, but it did have a big impact.
Oh, John, thank God there was a camera there that day. That's all I can say. Because not at that time, not a lot of the games would have been videoed, and look, in fairness to Stephanie, it was an unbelievable goal. And, you know, on the pitch, she's a great player, but even off it, she's a brilliant person. So I couldn't think if it happened to a better person, to be honest. But I think it gave the league exposure, what we needed. And yeah, I think even around the Irish squad and Katie and where we are now in the group, we're definitely going strength to strength. But yeah, I do think the goal definitely gave the country and, more importantly, the league the exposure it needed, you know.
And also as well, the fact that you've gone into coaching now as well, you got the profile to bring not only players, but also Irish coaches along in the future. Alan Brown and Conor Harran passed through your hands as well down in Cork and Isle, and they're doing well in the English leagues at the moment.
Yeah, two great guys, and it's great to see them both having a presence now in the senior international setup. Conor's obviously from my hometown, Bandon, and would have played with our club and would be very close with my younger brother. And he's a real level-headed young man, very technically gifted player. Tom Owen, our U19 head coach, would also have said that he's somebody that was one of the top three or four technical players that he's ever worked with, which is a huge compliment. And Conor was always driven. I remember having a coffee with Conor a number of years ago, and he was making that hard decision where to go next when he'd been released. And he went down into the lower tier, into League Two. And everywhere he went, he either became a fan favourite through leadership. He became a captain, I think, in both Barnsley and where he was prior to that. And I just think that he's going to have a phenomenal career. I think he's really going to find his feet in the next 6-12 months. I wouldn't be shocked if you saw Conor Horan as the captain of Aston Villa. That's how much I really rate him. And Alan is somebody who's, you know, I know Alan since he's a very, very young man. Alan was at my wedding. That's how much of a good relationship we have.
Did he sing?
He didn't sing. No, he didn't. I think I might have sang a lot. I think I stole the show that day. But Alan is somebody that just a hunger, a desire, a connection to the game. Like, I remember I used to be working in Feroig, a youth organisation, and we used to facilitate football at the weekends as a medium to give young people an option to, rather than antisocial behaviour or anything like that, that they could come in and sat Friday nights, Saturday nights for 2-3 hours, 5-a-side. Alan could play a game on a Saturday and he'd be rushing in the door and he'd play in every single 5-a-side. He could have a game on the Sunday morning, wouldn't he? He just lived the game. And you could tell from 10, 11 years of age, he was going to make it at the highest, highest level. And I genuinely believe in the next 12, 18 months again, I can really see him stamping his authority on the international setup. And it's an exciting time for Cork to have people like that representing what has happened. And it's a representation too in terms of the League of Ireland, like the success of it. Alan obviously played with the 19s in Cork, and now having a 13s, 15s, 17s and 19s, you're going to see more and more young people. I think this year alone, Jason, you might be able to back this up, there was 4 or 5 players made their debut, and each of them had played in the League of Ireland. So making their debut in the Championship or the Premier League, it's unbelievable the amount of young players now that are making their first team debut at a younger age because they've been playing at a higher level with higher competition week in, week out. And I think that makes everyone's life easier. I assume for Jason, when he's selecting players, it's much easier to have 20 clubs with 20 players each than it is to be trying to find them all over the country. And I think one really important thing for us is that there will be gaps filled. Rome isn't built in a day. You couldn't turn around 5 years ago and put in a 14s, 15s, 16s, 17s, 18s, 19s. I think we had to layer in certain age groups, and there certainly is a number of gaps that need to be filled, but that'll happen over time. But I genuinely believe with the structures we have in place now and the players that we're producing, we're coming into a very exciting era of Irish football.
And Jason, would you concur with what Niall is saying there as well? Not everybody does make it. And I remember Roy Keane didn't have the best of trials maybe as a 15-year-old, but eventually got picked up from Cove Ramblers by Nottingham Forest, and the rest is history. How do you deal with maybe some players that you feel might not be at the level or at the right pitch at a 15 or a 17-year-old to keep them in the system and for them not to lose heart?
Yeah, great question. What we would do, especially at 15s, I'll talk about the 15s, we would have around 60, 64 contact days a year. Some of them would be games and some of them would be training sessions. But most of them would be what we would call assessment days. So basically, if we have a tournament coming up, say, for example, a development tournament in October, we would run a camp with the top 45 players. We would have some assessment days leading into that so we can narrow down and select a squad. But once that tournament is over, what we would do is then we bring in the bigger numbers again. So we might select a squad of 20 for a tournament, But the minute it's over, we bring all the players back in again. Because at that age group, especially 13, 14s, they're going through growth spurts. It's all going to be different. There's no crystal ball when you select players. It's unfortunately, they're going through puberty. There's a lot of issues that you've got to, they're dealing with themselves. So they're going to perform at different levels. So where your top player might be very, very good in October, doesn't mean he's going to be your top player when it comes to the end of the season, the following May. So it's important that we have regular contact time with the players. When I took over in 2016, Rude came to me and says, listen, we're going to give you the job. Can you come back to me with a plan? We had 6 games a year. This year, we had 10, and our tournament in Italy obviously just fell by the wayside with the coronavirus. So basically, we would have had 15. So that's 150% increase in our games that Rude would have invested into the under-15s. And he feels it's important to do it because all our players are home-based. They're not in professional academies just yet. Even though we are improving our academy structure in Ireland, it's still not, the training loads are still not up to where we need them to be, so we can close the gap with the bigger nations that we play. So, for example, I'm just back from in February we played a tournament in Spain. We played Holland, so I sat down with the Dutch manager, just picking his brain, and he brought over the centre forward from Ajax who was playing against us that day. His name is Julian Rijkaard, and he's the golden boy. So I just asked him, says, you know, what's your training week like? So he trains 6 times and play a game a week. It's full time, like. You know, we're not there just yet. We might be in 3-4 times a week, but for us to keep closing the gap, for us to develop our players, make sure they're equipped better for the international tournaments as they get older, we just have to keep increasing the training load.
Have you seen coaching turned inside out, Pearl, in the last 10 years since you've been involved in the game with Shelburne and now with your hat on as a coach?
Yeah, I think the game itself as well has evolved, and the coaches, I suppose, who come into the game have to evolve with it. And I think everything that's now available in the FAI, I mean, you can come in at any level you want now as well with the pathway. So that really has, I suppose, helped the coaches in this country as well to grow with the game and evolve.
Okay, we're speaking to Pearl Slattery, Niall O'Regan and Jason Donoghue on coaching within the FAI and within football in Ireland on the Saturday panel. And we'll be back after the news, after this break. Don't go away. You are very welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock. At the moment, this is the Saturday panel. We're speaking about coaching in football in Ireland with 3 special guests. Niall O'Regan, the FAI Head of Coach Education. Jason Donoghue, the Republic of Ireland under-15s Head Coach. And Pearl Slattery, the FAI Women's Development Officer and the Captain of Shelburne. Pearl, I'll start with you. We have about 9 teams in the League of Ireland, the Women's League of Ireland. Is growing... say, not just Wexford Youths and Piemont and Shelburne, but is it growing and developing players at the middle to lower rank level a real priority for you? And like things like goalkeeping, are they the kind of coaching priorities for you at the moment, or is it something more broad?
Yeah, definitely. I think, look, in relation to the league, I think the league has to strengthen. We've always had 2 or 3 teams who have been really strong, and I think now trying to strengthen the other teams within the league is really important. And yeah, goalkeeping coaching is massive nowadays. I wouldn't be an expert in that area. Obviously, I don't play there, but like the game has evolved so much. The goalkeeper itself is such a huge player in the 11. You know, what we expect of goalkeepers now to what we did years ago. They're almost like an outfield player in the 11 now. So,
are we seeing a good close link up between the League of Ireland clubs guys and the underage teams? Are we seeing a joined up thinking now for young players so that they can actually have an almost academy structure within their geographical location around the League of Ireland club?
It's the best I've ever seen it. The communication between ourselves and the head of youth development in each League of Ireland club is the best I've ever had. After every event, we'd be in touch with each other. We'd be giving feedback on the players, putting training plans in place. You know, talking about what they're like off the pitch as well. Like, for example, we go away for 8 days. Pearl would be very similar to women's 70. And you're away for 8 days. Only 10% of that time in those 8 days is actually on the pitch with training and games. So it's a holistic approach that we have to do. And as I said earlier on about the word cohesion, you know, it's important that we're all working together to achieve something. And that is to improve our players in all aspects, not just on the pitch and off the pitch, and what it does take to be an international footballer at the top level. So yeah, the answer to me would be yes.
Yeah. I think it's key as well. And as Jason said, we're away for 8 days. We only see these players certain times of the year where the clubs have them constantly. So they're really the people who was doing the most work with the players, if you like. And to have a relationship with them is absolutely huge. And even now, James Scott, he's running webinars as well with our 17s coaches in the National League. And I just think having relationships with them is so, so important because they have the players a lot more than we do.
Go on, Niall, sorry.
Yeah, no, I think one of the key things Jason alluded to is having that core contact, as in that one person that you contact. So we have specific courses now, the Elite U B license, the Elite U A license, which specializes in dealing with these elite youth players. So every one of the clubs in the League of Ireland would have a head of youth development or an academy director who will have done that course. So we will have built relationships through that medium in terms of coach education. Like one of the things Rude and I spoke about a number of years ago was, as you alluded to earlier, that fall off. What happens if a player doesn't make it? So what happens if a player comes through 13s, 15s, 17s and 19s now and doesn't make it as a player at the level that they had hoped to do so? And one of the things we created was a League of Ireland Women's National League coach education program where we actually provide free education for the players at 15, 17s and 19s where they actually leave the 19s age range as a National D licensed coach, and that's completely free of charge. And similar, we do the same thing with the Women's National League and the Girls 17s. So it's about giving them a dual career, and that's really important that we're making it realistic that there are a very small percentage of players that will go to the highest levels. But if we can utilise their time when they're playing, but give them the skill sets in terms of education so that when, if they do end up going back into the amateur adult leagues, that they could have a career through coaching, that they're comfortable with the coaching structures. And I think that's really important. And Pearl is somebody who, again, spoke about it earlier. As she was playing through, we now start to contact players. Katie McCabe and a few of the other girls have started doing their B license now because we want them to be ready to make that natural transition out of playing into coaching and make it easier for them so that it doesn't become a shock factor.
Have you seen a positive impact in your community, Pearl?
As in
with coaching and with more young girls playing the game and that kind of thing?
Oh, definitely. Like my full-time role, I'm a women's football development officer, so it's just completely based on the girls' game. So I'm very lucky. I work on the south side of the city, which is where I live as well. And now you're out and about every day. So whether it's with clubs, schools, and I definitely think, you know, the women's game as well is getting bigger in this country. And I think it all goes back to if we qualify, I think that can then take it to the next level.
Yeah.
Like England, when England started, you know, up the levels and stuff. But I think if we can do that and get there, it'll definitely go to the next level 100%.
We saw the numbers that watched the England women's team on the BBC. They got a World Cup. And we saw with the Irish women's rugby team what they did a few years ago. It's all about getting these players on billboards and getting them known and actually identifying them as somebody in your community. Because like with some of the men's players, they're off to England maybe earlier than that.
Oh, absolutely. Even with the hockey, we've seen, you know, how well they did. And I just think we're in need of that. And look, Roberta has done a great job and we're very, very close. And as you said, we need exposure, we need faces out there, we need role models for the young girls growing up. But no, I think we're not too far from it. We're very, very close, so hopefully we can get there.
Parents, folks, how do you deal with the most important person in a young person's life, their parent? Is there a management involved in that? They've got huge expectations, they've got huge ambitions for their child to make it. And to play well, and also you have them, I'm sure, mentoring their loved one as well. Is there a big play in that regarding the management of that? How much is that taken into account when you're dealing with your coaching education?
Well, from the 15's perspective, the first day they all come in, I would all the players would go into dressing rooms with me staff, and all the parents would come into our media room in the FEI, and I would outline exactly the year. I would embrace any questions they will have. I will also tell them about, you know, the way I work. I won't give feedback directly to parents. I would give feedback directly to their club coaches, because it's the club coaches that are the one who can implement the feedback in their training environment. So I would embrace them. I would communicate with them on a regular basis because it's important. I'm a parent myself of a 15-year-old. You know, I want to know what he's going to have to do. You know, if he's going playing football, if he's going into a hotel with a team for a week, you know, what's he going to learn? What's he going to do? Is his welfare looked after? So it's very important that you actually have all the stakeholders, not just the parents, you know, the club managers, his teammates that you might be coming into the same environment with. They all must understand that it's a little bit different than the club environment, international football. So you need to outline exactly what you're expected of everybody, including the parents, right at the start.
Yeah, I think as well, when we meet, James, bring the parents in at every assessment or every meeting that we have, he's very open and honest. So he would actually give feedback to parents. But again, it would just be about their individual child. But for me, parents are so, so important, especially, I think, with the younger age group. You know, at that age group, the parents are the one dropping up the train and our trials, our games. They're the first person the players see when they get into the car. So what parents are actually saying to their kids is, I can't explain how big it is on a player's mindset, and I suppose their mindset, their mind frame, even, you know, after that. It's so, so important. I don't know if you've seen the Van Persie video.
No.
With his little son. So his little son got into the car and was, you know, kind of blaming everybody else and why he wasn't playing. He was a sub. And Van Persie said, hold on a minute now. You can either be a winner or a loser. And stop blaming everybody else. And then a few days later, he went to watch him in training, and his attitude has just completely changed because Van Persie actually flipped it. So I suppose they're so important on kids' attitudes. And as I said, they're the first people to see. So it's just so, so important that the parents are on board.
Sorry,
Jason. I think the role of the parent is key in terms of making sure that's their role, and that we as coaches and coach educators embrace that at all levels. So if you become, like most of the coaches that we have at the youngest ages, 6 to 9, 10 to 12, which are the real core fundamental ages for making sure our players fall in love with the game. And that's the one key objective of that age range for any parent or volunteer coach, is to make sure a player falls in love with the game. The key thing for us is that they always remember that they're the parent. And then when they come to training and they're mixing with a group of 20 players and they're working with them, they're in that role of the coach, but they're still the parent, and they have to make sure that where they can, it's positive reinforcement, where they're asking the right questions. Did you enjoy it? What was the best moment of today? What didn't you like and why didn't you like it? And can you improve it? That it's open questions, that they're not becoming an analyst, or they're not critiquing every single time they touch the ball or every time they make a run, that they're there just as a support mechanism, and it's positive. The more positive reinforcement that they can do, and within that it can be positive reflection, that can say, look, maybe you could have done this, or maybe try this the next day, rather than being critical or cynical towards something, you shouldn't have done this. So it's the way in which they speak, and I think that's really important when we're working with players. And as the players come into the elite stage with Jason, I think the key word is communication. Like, it's so important that from the outset, the parents are brought in, very clearly communicated, this is what your son or your daughter is going to experience. And that's really key for their development, because once there's clear communication, there is no grey area.
Talking to coaches, it's not just about the manuals, the tactics boards, being in the education classes and the webinars. It's about also talking to people in the game, both in Ireland and across Europe. How much do you pick up from speaking to other great coaches? And do you need to be a sponge regarding the assimilation of information so you can then help other people?
For me personally, I've done quite well to obviously represent my country as a head coach. And I would put it down to surrounding myself with the right people. I'm very, very lucky that I can go into a room with Stephen Kenny, Paul Ozam, Colin O'Brien, Tom Moan, Jim Crawford. Such experienced guys, such humble guys who have played all over the world, coached all over the world. You know, some of the best, John Marling for me was a mentor. He's now academy manager in Brighton. But surround yourself with these type of people, Niall Harrison and all, that's where you learn everything from. We're looking to do club visits, but it's actually being around these people and having an open mind. And that's something we try to get across to our coaches. Because when the coaches come into an education course, we're trying to, you know, make sure the all their experience that they've gained, they're going to share with everyone else. Because they learn from it, pull everything together, and they will get little nuggets of information that will make a difference when the time is right. Especially when you tailor-make the programs to their clubs, to their league where they're representing. For me, straight off, I've done so well for myself, but I would put it down to being around the right people, learning from the right people.
I think Jason, you hit the nail on the head earlier when you said it. As a coach, we're all thieves and we want to try and take as much as we can from each other. As Jason said, the department that Rude has created is very dynamic. It's very much about honest, critical feedback, and the feedback is never taken as a negative. Jason, Pearl and I have worked closely together over the last number of years, and if we feel something isn't high performance, then we say it to each other, and we're not personalising it, we're just saying it because we want to make sure that each and every one of us are doing high performance at every opportunity. I myself had the opportunity, I did my pro licence in the north. It was a great course grouping. You had Benny McCarthy, Harry Kewell, Herman Horidison, Liam Racine. It was a phenomenal group of coaches. Lisa Fallon, who's just recently gotten a role as her first role in terms of being a head coach. There was a very dynamic group. I've done a number of Raymond Verheyen's courses, and I can certainly tell you, if you ever want to take yourself out of the comfort zone, you do one of Raymond's courses, because he is the epitome of high performance. But only on one of his recent ones, you had Graham Potter, and you had a number of other high profile managers. And it's really about every opportunity we get to sit down and talk about the game, you'll pick up something. It could be a phrase, it could be a sentence, it could be a way in which you deal with a situation. But I think it's every single opportunity you have to sit with coaches and talk about the game. And it can be a grassroots coach. I've been on grassroots courses where somebody will say something and you will walk away and go, that is actually a great approach. That's a great idea. And I think we have that. Like Pearl, we experienced that with the female B license. It was phenomenal to have. We've had two female-only B licenses in the last 2 years. And it was phenomenal to see the dynamic, engaging, interactive environment where you had females comfortable because the entire group was a group of females. And for how many conversations that we have that went into late into the evening talking about the game, specifically the female side.
Yeah, unbelievable. I think you'll always constantly learn. And as Jay and Niall said, it's just when you are learning and out, whether it's on courses or at events, that you're taking little snippets and taking it away for yourself and wherever way you want to use it. But, and as Niall says, to me, wherever level you're on at the pathway, you can learn from anybody. And I think that's the key thing. We're always going to be constantly learning.
I don't think there's a direct science around what we do in coach education. I mean, I was lucky enough, I would have worked with Robbie Keane, Damien Duff and a few others. But Damien Duff alone said, the first day of his B licence, he arrived with a computer underneath his arm he just bought from Harvey Norman. You know, but he came in to work with me with the 15s, and I made him do all our presentations on PowerPoint. But at the end of the 15 season, he was so competent enough just using the computer, it was ridiculous. His first training session on the pitch, he came off and he'd done a quick interview, and what he basically said was he's played against Messi and Ronaldo. He says, well, that was the most nervous he's ever been. And you learn from all these guys. These guys go out and they experience what they do and they share stories and come back. And then you realise, you know, it's a great job to do what we're doing, helping coaches develop at all age, whether it's grassroots, whether it's the top level. But we're all very similar in what we do. We get nervous when we go on the pitch. We learn from each other. We're trying to pick up information. It's fantastic. It's a great environment to work in. We're very, very lucky that we meet all these people on different courses every day of the year. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I remember actually doing my B license, Jay, and Sean St. Ledger was on it. And I remember the fourth day, bags of nerves, a lot of us. But he actually turned around and said to me, like, you know, I'm really nervous here, you know. And I tell you, my nerves went, because if he was nervous, then we were all nervous. So it was great, though, to see someone like that be open and honest. And again, it just helps everybody on the course, but everybody is in the same boat, you know.
I'll give you a great story about Sean. He won't mind me saying this, because we've done a few webinars and Zoom chats. So Sean is now what works with me as one of my assistants, John, with the under-15s. So we basically just came in, and our first his first event was a training camp in Johnstown. And we had off the ball. Raph was down with the camera and the mic, and
yeah,
we did everything on. So what we do, we're doing some unit work. So I split, you know, one of my coaches, my goalkeeper coach, I said, I want you working down there on the front three, in the midfield three, creating chances. Sean, you're going to work with me, and we're going to work on playing out, building up from the back. It's so important that we're comfortable building possession. You're a good centre-back. You play top level. You know, let's use your experience. And Sean goes to me, goes, he says, I tell you what, he says, this is my first time in, so I'll just monitor what you're doing. So I said, fine. So we went on to the pitch. So there's loads of press around. The camera is around. Went on to the pitch. I got the session going. Then I just said, hold on, Sean. Hold that whistle for a second. Here, you do it. And walked straight off the pitch and left them there. And then he, as he said, it was the most nervous. He phoned his girlfriend that day and said it was the most nervous he's ever been. But it's outside comfort zone here. Go, you can't make a mistake. All you're going to do is learn.
This is the guy who scored against Italy in Croke Park.
And it's the guy who scored against Italy in Croke Park. And he went in and he done it. And he's just gone straight up that way. His ability now as a coach is fantastic.
Well, there's the humility there, which is brilliant to see, isn't it? That these have been Premier League players and they've come in and they've had respect for the environment, the new environment they're in, and they're almost starting from scratch. And you know, you've worked a bit with Damien Nile as well in Celtic.
Yeah, we had a number of visits. It was a tough experience, one, because one of the visits we were there and we were doing a part of his pro license. You see every aspect of training, the majority of the games, so on and so forth. And they were knocked out in the Champions League. And I remember sitting in Neil Lennon's lounge. She's a private lounge afterwards. And it was a bit tasty outside. There was a lot of negativity being thrown at the club and at Neil and everything like that. And Neil's wife just turned around and said, "Oh, you're here with Damien." And we were like, "Yeah, yeah." She said, "We won't be having you back anyway. You're bringing a bad omen." So we came back about 2 months later and they won, thanks be to God. But no, look, that's one of the things we do in coach education. We try and tailor it to the individual clubs and each of the educators, including myself. We would go and spend time in their own environment because we have to make sure what we do in the course is transferable. So actually being in their environment and seeing how coaches work with their own players is so important, because sometimes we can bring players in and a coach can, exactly as Pearl has talked about, you can get very nervous because you don't know the players' names. You're trying to do a coaching practice that you haven't really done before. You've now got 24 peers standing there looking at you. And if you're a high-profile person, it's even more pressure because they're expecting you to automatically be a good coach. And it's not the case. You say it's just, or we see it ourselves all the time. We've now got John O'Shea, Carlo Cudicini coming onto the next pro license. We've had Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, Andy Reid, Keith Andrews, all have one consistent thing. They're so humble. When they come into the environment, they will literally look for somebody that has coached at the amateur game for 20 odd years because they want to just attach themselves and figure out, okay, what's the best way to deal with this scenario, or how would you plan this session plan? And for that coach who has not played at the highest level, it's unbelievable. I experienced that with Alan Kelly, the former Irish goalkeeper. We've built a phenomenal friendship because we did the A license. And when you do a course together, you're literally in for 3 or 4 days, 15-hour days, and you're helping each other. And it's phenomenal because I never played at the highest level, and he could give me as much insight into that as possible while I had been coaching for 15, 20 years, so I could give him the insight into what I've experienced and how to plan and prepare. And it's really about the course's environments are phenomenal. And it's a credit to Pearl, it's a credit to Jason and all of the staff we have in coach education. That dynamic, that learning environment that is created is unbelievable. And I know Jason and Pearl, they take that and they do the same thing with the players. Like Jason's U15 players always are so comfortable on a tactics board. And how are they like Jason the first day they have to use it?
You know what? They're nervous about it. But once you just make them do it. Make them do it, they're fine. Just make them do it and they get better and they get better and get better. And just as you mentioned it there, we played England in December. And we came in at half-time. They were so nervous. So nervous before the game. Because we were on the first team pitch, England first team pitch. We were in, if you ever go to George's Park, the dressing rooms are named after very famous footballers. We were in the Paul Gascoigne dressing room and the kids were so nervous. But we came in at half time, we played really well. And what we do as coaches, we would normally stay outside the dressing room 2 or 3 minutes and just have a chat and see what we're going to talk about, improvement goals. We went in, and as we went into the dressing room, these kids at 13 and 14 were already on the tactic board discussing it themselves. It was phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. So me, Richie and Sean, we had a coffee and sat back. We literally had a coffee and just let them do it. And that's a credit to the grassroots coaches. It's a credit to the clubs that they graduated through into League of Ireland. Everyone should be taking credit for it. You know, they're not my players. They're not their players. They're football players, the Irish football players that we're trying to get ready to win a World Cup. That should be our goal. The pinnacle of football is to win a World Cup. Let's put that on the top of the pyramid, strip it right back, and now let's get the right environment right from the bottom up to correct that we can win a World Cup in the next 10, 20 years.
Niall, are the supports there? We all know about the financial issues the FAI have had. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Have you got any guarantees about the supports for coach education? Because I see a lot of positivity with the women's team. I see a lot of positivity with the underage teams. Stephen Kenny's a breath of fresh air. We want this to be supported. Will it be supported?
Yeah, 100%. I genuinely have never been as excited. I am in the association over 8 years now, and I genuinely feel with the governance review, with the structural review, with the changes that are being implemented with the current CEO, Deputy CEO and the board, it's a very exciting time. I think we're now in a very clear one vision. I think the organisation will, within the structural changes that are coming down the line, you will see a joint up approach from bottom up and from top down. I believe that it is a very exciting time. I do believe that if Stephen Kenny and Vera can get us to major tournaments, it always makes things a little bit easier. And I think we will be able to invest more. I think the developments that are currently in place in terms of what we've introduced, the 13s, 15s, 17s, 19s, and the 17s and the Women's National League side of the house is phenomenal. I think that we're getting to a point that in the next 12 to 18 months, when we get back to active football, when we get games back being played, when we have the Aviva packed to the rafters and we hopefully qualify in the men's and the women's, we could be going into 2021 and it could be an exciting era for Irish football. I'm very, very positive. I'm looking forward to being part of it. And I genuinely believe that the support will be there like they've never been there before because the right structures are going to be in place.
And also we've got challenges in the country with other sports being played. If you go to New Zealand, it's just rugby. If you go to other countries, it's just one sport. Here we have rugby and we have women's rugby. And we've also ladies football is very popular at Pearl. It's just something you just have to deal with, the fact that you have to compete for attracting young players and players that will be the stars of the future to soccer.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I think it's tough because the GA has taken off. But for me, football is still the best sport of this country. And again, I think once you get to a certain age, a player will make up their minds at the end of the day. And, you know, I suppose we have to be there leading it, that this is the sport to play. And as I said, I keep going back to it, but qualifying for a tournament again will help us with that. And it's something we've probably been missing on the women's side senior wise, you know, the last while. But if we can get to that level, the game will continue to grow.
Have you guys got preferred tactics? Are you 3-5-2 people, 4-3-3 people, 4-4-2 people? Do you like sweepers? Are you like false nines? What's your philosophy?
Well, with the 15s we would go 1-4-3-3, but there's flexibility, versatility within that. At times, you know, one of your midfielders joins your striker. At times, one of your centre midfielders might drop between your centre back. So it's flexibility. But the philosophy is more is to make sure we start dominating possession, make sure we're calm under pressure, make sure we're going out to win games, not try to lose games, not playing for draws. It's positive. And I mean, you keep saying about Stephen being a breath of fresh air. It really is. When you leave a room, when you have Ruud, Stephen, and even all the other international managers talking about football and what we're going to try to achieve in the next few years, I mean, I just want to run out and start training straight away, you know, when you leave the room. That's exactly what it's like now. When you talk Tom Moane, the passion of Tom Moane and Colin O'Brien, Paul Ozam, these people are legends in the game in Ireland, and now you've Stephen Kenny, you just leaving the room saying, just let's get on with it. Like let's get onto the pitch. Let's start playing football again. You know, it's phenomenal what we're trying to achieve now at the moment. And what Ruud has brought together in terms of how we're all working together is the best thing I've been involved in, I have to say, as a coach in 20 years.
Similar with the 17s, we'd be the 1-4-3-3 as well. And again, getting the girls comfortable on the ball. I think the biggest thing for us this year has been, you know, changing the mentality. They're not just shown, as I said earlier, showing up the groups just to take part now. We are getting into the mind frame that we can, you know, give these groups a good go and, you know, win it or come second or whatever it might be. But, you know, we're not just there to take part anymore. And the mindset now is, you know, take each game as they come, but definitely be going out there to win them or to try to. So anyway.
Yeah, I think it's so important though in the modern game. And I think Pearl and Jason have both talked about it in terms of 1-4-3-3 is obviously the system in which we really encourage coaches to play an attractive mindset of football, because especially for young players, it's proven to give them the space, the width and depth in terms of where we want them to play. But for us, it's about making players comfortable with being able to communicate, make decisions and execute those decisions. And you see it in the international teams. There's been a number of situations where that 1-4-3-3 is adapted into a 1-4-2-3-1 or a 1-4-5-1 or whatever it may be. And it's really about making sure that our players are comfortable with making those decisions on the pitch. And I think, as Jason said, if you've got U15 international players in England, in their backyard, and they're making decisions at halftime, now you're getting self-regulating people. And that's literally, in business terms, the best you can get. If people are able to be self-regulating, they can manage their own decisions. And it's about then the coaches to facilitate that, to give that direction. So it's great. And I think a lot of people in the modern game, we really do see multiple types of formations. And once that ball is thrown in there, that formation adapts and players just need to be comfortable with that.
And just to finish up, obviously it's about formations and tactics and winning and playing the game the right way. But it's also about managing people. And that is really, I'm sure, a huge part of coach education, to manage people, for them to take responsibility, for there to be no nonsense, but you also have a bit of crack, and to have that team spirit that everybody is equal and everybody's got a role to play and you're only as strong as the weakest link.
Even if you bring, you know, bring it back to coach education, as obviously I have a dual role, we would work off the framework from UEFA, which is a competency-based model. So what we do, competency one would be, you know, how to manage games, you know, analysis of game systems and sideline behavior. Two would be training sessions. But when you go to three and four, you're talking about player development, you're talking about strategic plans, periodization, how it all fits together. So when you managing players is so important. You talk to most people, even like a Stephen Kenny, you're talking about strong characters in a dressing room, you know, but you also the environment you set has to be fearless. It has to be where you have self-belief. You know, when your players leave the dressing room, they should be feeling 10 foot tall, not inferior. And that's what we're trying to achieve now, especially at the younger age group, that when we play the England, the Spain, the Hollands, and that's what we do. We test ourselves against the best. But when they leave, they don't feel inferior. They feel like they can go out and win any game. And that is all down to man management, making them feel comfortable and having a really safe environment. So even though we do it in the international team, we try to bring that back into our coach education to make sure our coaches realise how important there is to look at the individual development of the player on and off the pitch.
I think if coaching or being a player, you're a personal force at the end of the day, and we'd be very big at 17s having a connection with our players and know that the girls know we actually care about them outside of football as well. And I know in my own personal experience, I always gave that extra 10%. I gave everything for a coach who I felt like cared about me. You know what I mean? So I think having a connection with the players is absolutely massive. James has a saying, develop the player, develop the person. And it's huge. Like, the game has evolved. I remember years ago, I'd show up to train and you'd say hello to your manager and then you'd say bye, leaving, and that'd be it. But the game has completely changed now, and, you know, the connection is so, so important.
Yeah, big, and with us in coach education, as Jason said, everything we do is based upon theories of learning or principles of learning. And UEFA have very clear principles in terms of adult learning, what's best practice. And they talk about making sure a coach feels valued, making sure that they're engaged, challenged, making sure what they experience is authentic, always giving them feedback and making sure there's a collaboration, that it's not just feedback in one way, that the coaches themselves work with each other. So when they come into our programs, we get them to do self-reflection, we get them to do peer reflection where they'd work with one of the other coaches on the course. We have micro groups where you have small groups and they'd reflect and challenge each other. And it's really a dynamic learning environment. But in the end of the day, it's all about the people. And the most important skill any good coach can have is people skills, is having that ability to communicate with somebody. And it can be as simple as seeing their body language, knowing that there's something off, knowing that they're acting in a different way that they would normally act, and just asking those simple questions. Are you okay? How are things doing? How's the family? And just connecting with people, because very young coaches or very young players, the youngest age is 6 to 9, 10 to 12, think about their inner circles. You've got their families, you've got their schools, their teachers. They're all adults that they don't choose. We don't choose our family, we don't choose our school, we don't choose our teachers. But as a coach, a young person will choose that coach, because if they don't like them, they won't go back. So that's the answer to the question, what is a good coach? You're a good coach if young players choose to be in your company. But there's a huge responsibility in that you have to realize that you're a role model to them. and they see you as in this hierarchy as a person that they look up to. And as a coach, it's so important to make sure you communicate to them all, because Jason, you'd say it, what are the types of personalities you have in a dressing room? You could have the quiet one, you could have the boisterous one, you could have the one that just likes to listen to music. And it's about how do you communicate and connect to every single one of them. And that's our responsibility as a coach, to deal with every single person and treat them the same.
Finally, also, folks, go on, Jason.
I also think as well that when you're talking about man managing, being a coach sometimes it's not as easy as people think. You're on a sideline and you're 5-1 down with 20 minutes to go against Holland.
You give this to Sean St. Ledger then, do you?
I give you a great story. There's another story in that game. Just got the job 2016. Rue Doctor decides to come away with us. He's sitting in the stand in Holland. We're playing his home nation. We're 4-1 down. There's about 10 minutes to go. I'm looking around. I'm scribbling loads of notes. And I'm like, oh, God, what am I going to do? 4-1 down here. I go up and I start coaching the team more from the sideline, trying to keep them going, trying to get into it. You talk about man management. I'm just trying to keep them because we need to play Holland again in 2 days' time. You know? So I go back to my bench and I turn around to Damien Duff. He's first time in with us. He's in for this. And I turned around to Damien. He's on his A license. I said, what do you think we should do here? And he turned around and goes to me, don't be asking me. I'm here to learn from you, he says.
And he has learned, Niall. Niall, you were telling me that this guy's destined for the top.
Oh, 100%. We've had the pleasure of dealing with a lot of top people and a lot of top professionals. But as Jason said, IT proficiency, I've never seen a person as IT proficient as what Damien is. I've been in his own environment. The respect he has from the top role, the professionals, Scott Browns, these types of guys, you only earn that type of respect if you're a top, top person. And really, I genuinely believe, I've no doubt that Damien will manage at the highest levels in the Premier League and at international at some point in time, because he has it. He has the hunger, he has the work rate, he has the energy, he's the knowledge and experience, he has everything going for him.
Finally, folks, what's the first thing you're going to do football-wise when this pandemic eases? We need to get out of our homes and we need to get back to society, and hopefully when everybody's safe, we'll be able to do so. You must be really looking forward to getting back in the pitch, Pearl and Jason and Niall getting back into coaching.
Absolutely. As I said, we were a day away from the Women's National League starting, so I don't think it's a little rougher than that. But yeah, I suppose just to get back training physically wise, but even just to see our teammates and how big they can be. And it's another thing you take for granted, seeing those type of people week in, week out. And yeah, just looking forward to seeing them all.
We were due to play Poland in September, so we've asked them to move it back later in the year. So hopefully we can get a couple of games in before Christmas. And just as I'm here, I just got a text coming in. Turkey want to come to Ireland to play sometime early next year. So straight away we're going to get the kids on the pitch, start selecting a squad, and get playing football.
Yeah.
I just can't wait to get out there and just sit in Turner's Cross and see Cork City winning games, and looking forward to football and just live football, just being around the same people. There's so many people that you meet on a regular basis, whether it be in the League of Ireland when you're going to games around the country, or you're going to, we deliver courses in Donegal and Galway, and you meet so many people. It's just missing that, and missing that interaction. And football is a community, it's a language amongst itself, and we're very, very lucky to be part of it at the levels that we are. And I'm just looking forward to getting back and getting into that and just getting onto the pitch really and being involved in it.
Well, Niall O'Regan, Jason Donoghue and Pearl Slattery, you've been so good to give us your time on the Saturday panel on the coaching of football in Ireland with the FAI. Thanks so much for joining us today, and we wish you the very best of luck.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks very much.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.